of Women Podcast. Our Women Podcast.
We're here at Olby's today for the next series of the Power of Women podcast. My name is Ruby Rare. I am an author and sex educator and podcaster and very enthusiastic Margate resident. And this series is called Leading Ladies. I'm going to be chatting to some brilliant women doing fantastic things all across Thanet. I'm delighted to be joined by Sandra Hampton from Arts for All today. How are you doing, Sandra?
Hello, I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about chatting. We've already been having a really good natter before we start recording. So, delighted to have you. And we're going to be talking about all of the brilliant things that you do in the area. But I wanted to start from the very beginning to get to know you a little bit better.
Okay.
So, to begin with, where did you grow up and what were you like as a child?
I grew up in Cornwall in a small town called Hale. I'm the youngest of five children and I was a very creative, sporty child who did really well with sports and art and maths, and those were pretty much all the subjects that I felt comfortable in. Later on in life, I found out I was dyslexic. So looking back at my childhood, I can see why perhaps I chose to not listen in certain subjects, especially English. And I can remember once in school where we were in science and I was asked to read out a paragraph loud in the class. And unfortunately, it didn't go well. I ended up pronouncing the word gnat as gnat. And at that time, I didn't realise I was dyslexic. So obviously, everybody laughed in the class and it put barriers up for me to put my hand up in class. So I was always very, very shy in most subjects, but really was rather confident, not overly confident, but more confident in art and PE mainly.
That's amazing. I mean, I think so many people have experiences like that in school where your confidence is so knocked and we can really trace that and see the lasting impact of it, but that you had some spaces in an education environment that felt safe and felt like you could be creative and maybe competitive and like strive.
Yeah, and just feel like, yes, I can do this. There is something I feel good at.
Yeah.
I'm not the best. I was always okay not being the best, but it was good that not all subjects I was in the bottom sets for. So I really focused on art and sports, and I played sports after school. When I was 16, I did try and get into fashion design. I didn't do very well in the interview. That put a barrier up. I went on to sixth form. They sent me English homework, so I stopped that. And I kept stopping things. But what I also didn't stop doing was trying, finding a new avenue for me. So I went and spoke to a careers officer at 16, and he asked me some simple questions. What do I like? What I don't like? And found a YTS scheme. Now, it was called Service Away From Home back in the 80s. And it meant they moved you out of your home area as well as give you work experience and some support in education. And I moved to Kent from Cornwall at the age of 17. So off I went on the train on my own. And I came here. And the first night, I was actually in Trinity Square, my accommodation in Margate. So my first night was here in Margate. And I cried myself to sleep and said, I'm going home tomorrow. I didn't even unpack. And then I woke up the next morning and thought, you've got to give this a go. Give it 24 hours at least. And I was on a placement in the Newington Centre, community centre in Newington, and a lovely lady there called Sheena said, can I have a look at your accommodation? And she said, come with me, you're not staying here. And she supported me, she found me a great place to live. And it started off from then. I did lots of work experience in nurseries and community centres, working with special needs, and I finally got work experience at Fallon School and the Royal School for the Deaf because I wanted to learn BSL. And then I became a classroom support worker for about 6 years, travelled overseas, came back, decided to go and get my fine art degree because I wanted to pull my creative skills with BSL and disabilities together, and became an art teacher at the Royal School for the Deaf and Westgate College.
That's so amazing, Sandra. I feel really inspired hearing that, because we're all like, it's been so lovely from the moment that we've met each other this morning. You're so passionate about these two areas and kind of how they collide in your life and in the world in general. And to be able to recognise that from such a young age and just continue on with that, and for the, you know, what that looks like exactly to keep evolving and changing, but for that passion to be there from such a young age is so exciting, because not that many people get that. Like, I know people who are like in their 40s and finally being like, oh, this is the thing that I love. This is what I want to do. Like,
this
how amazing.
Is what I'm good at. And I think I know my strengths quite well. I know that coming here today, doing this podcast for me was a real challenge. And speaking about what I do in this format where it's recorded does give me quite a lot of anxiety. But I really felt like if I'm going to push the young people I work with into the community, then I've got to push myself. I can't support them and not do it myself. So I'm really, really pleased you've asked me here today and just to be a part of my first podcast. And hopefully many more where I'll feel a bit more comfortable.
Of course.
And I'll get better. But also because of the community that I work with, I really want to show them that even though I'm nervous about doing something, and you can be, but together we're going to hold each other's hand and we're going to go out there and we're going to show people what we can do.
Yeah. And actually being honest about nervousness is such a power in itself because we're all nervous about stuff all the time. But a lot of the time we're really encouraged to stay very quiet about that. And actually, you know, in you being able to say that, it gives other people permission to look at those feelings and embrace them and kind of do things, not even in spite of nerves, like with the nerves alongside them. So
absolutely. Back in school, I didn't put my hand up. And because I was afraid of what I would say, if I would pronounce words incorrectly, I didn't know I had dyslexia back then. But now I realise I have, and I know that if I just try my best and be honest and say, look, I struggle with those words. Even the words with intersectionality. No, I said that, but I have to really think about it and break it down and to be able to pronounce it, hopefully, correctly.
Yeah, but honesty is so good with that. It's really nice to just be able to speak about that instead of it all existing in our heads.
Yes.
So I want to talk about... I really want to talk about Arts for All, because kind of from your journey from being teaching art.
Yes.
Where did Arts for All come from? And could you explain a little bit about what it looks like today?
Well, I was given the opportunity at the Royal School for the Deaf to teach primary, secondary, sixth form and FE. So I worked with small groups of young people and children to be creative, to allow them to be themselves as artists, which is can be quite difficult in school because you've got curriculum and coursework. But I'd always give them a part of the session where it was their choice. And that's when we saw these beautiful things happen. One young artist that I have is Nessie, and I knew Nessie at RSDC. So for her to come to Art for All now is wonderful. But the connection there is at the end of the session, that's when Nessie came alive, when you just said, show me what you can do. And when she showed me what she could do, I could then very safely take her on a journey creatively. And now that's happening at Art for All. So to get back to how Art for All came about, the school and college closed December 2015, unfortunately, due to financial difficulties. And we were all made redundant and children had no hearing impaired special needs school to go to. So it was really devastating for the families. Out of that, I went home and my partner, Paul, said, you have an opportunity now, what do you want to do? And I said, look, I know I struggled with teaching, and I did. I struggled with it because I struggled with the restraints of curriculum and Ofsted and what was expected of us to teach these young kids, and I just wanted to let them grow as artists rather than saying, this is what we're learning today, this is what we're doing. Let's open the door and give you opportunities to choose and develop. And I said, I know I struggled with teaching, but deafness and art, this is my passion, it's what I love. And he very kindly said to make our home work for you. You know, we have all this space here. If you think you can make a go of it, do it here. So that was in the December. In the January, I started writing notes and brainstorming ideas and I didn't know where to go. But I had told a few of the staff members I was going to start my own club. And one young lady, Hazel, rung me up and said, I'm working with Allegra over the weekend. Allegra has PAs that support her to live as independently as possible. Are you starting your art sessions? Can we come along? There's nothing all weekend for Allegra to do. Nothing. And I said, look, just come along. How much will it be? I said, nothing. We've just got to figure this out. Just come along on the Saturday. And that was our first session, was Allegra and I. And for 3 months, we ran it in my dining room. And then slowly pulled up the carpet, got all the resources in, and off we went. 3 months later, I had about 10 young people coming through the door. And we haven't looked back. We've just gone from strength to strength. We've just had our 6-year anniversary, and in the last 12 months has probably been our most successful in terms of competitions, submissions, exhibitions, art sales. We've gone from a little art club to what I like to think is a professional art studio for a group of young people whose common goal is, let us show you what we can do.
Yeah. And I think that agency there is so important, that it's kind of, you've created a space that is a community of really inspiring, like passionate artists, and to have a space where you can open the doors and let other people come in and see this space you've created.
Yeah.
That's really nurturing and really nice, because often it can be very intimidating.
I'm so lucky.
To walk into an art space and be like, Hello, I'm an artist, I can do this stuff. Like, that's terrifying, at least for me. So to have that nurture and encouragement, and to let people then like bounce from that off into the rest of the world, is incredible.
I love offering people the opportunity to come and see the studio. And mm-hmm. I want people to meet the people I get to hang out with and create with, because I think their stories, we have a story that's art for all, but individually, all the artists that come through the door have their own unique story. Their families have an amazing story to tell. And I think because they're young adults, there's an opportunity there, and I'm not sure how that will manifest itself into becoming perhaps a book or just some podcasts or something where we can teach other families who are just starting out with somebody who's hearing impaired, with communication difficulties, that there aren't limits. We only put limits on disabilities because of perhaps how we see a disability as something that, oh, okay. No, let's take that and move forward with it. Let's see what you can do. And we want to show people this is what you can do with your young person. Not everybody that comes to the studio is perhaps, in the eyes of others, naturally creative. They come for other reasons, whether it's because I'm a BSL user and I sit and listen to them and we have a chat and a cup of tea and then we make something. But that chat, that cup of tea, that time spent in that space creates something. Whenever I put on an exhibition, I'm always thinking about the young people. Can they access the building? Where's the light if I'm interpreting something for Instagram? Making sure that my BSL's as best as it possibly can be, because... and I've lost my train of thought. I do that so much.
There's so much
that you take when you're in the studio. You think about where you're going to go next with the art now, and the artists, and we just want to be able to tell the story so that we can encourage young families that perhaps have a young person with a disability and say, look what you can do creatively.
Yeah. And what do you think that intersectionality between art and disability is somewhere that you exist all of the time? But I guess I'm curious to find out a little bit about, maybe if you want to share about some of your artists, of kind of how... what that springboard has done for some of the young people you've worked
for. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they all work at different levels. They've all got different, very different abilities. And I like to use that word ability. I like to use the word unique ability. So that when we put on a show or we go into the community, you know, the first thing you see is the artwork. And the artwork's amazing. Sorry, I get very emotional about the artwork. The artwork is really beautiful and bright and eclectic, and you walk into the space and you don't realise. I'm so sorry.
Don't apologise.
I guess I just feel like anybody who is passionate about what they've experienced and having barriers... that with the right resources in place, things can happen. And if we just open our minds a little bit to what can happen. And I have seen some of my artists just respond to me in the space. And they're not interested in having their work on display. They're not interested in being promoted on Instagram. Everything I do I try and get their permission to do it first. So we have one young person who's not interested in being on Instagram or anything. They're quite happy coming in. They have their chat and we make something. They allow me to photograph their artwork and try and sell it for them. But at the same time, they're okay with that's enough. And then we've got other artists who, for the first time, Katie, who does a lot of our bird paintings, she's just completed her first commission for herself independently, completely independently. So somebody's asked her to paint. I've guided her and saying, if you get this paper and this frame, you can pull it together quite easily. You do it in your own time and all of the money goes to you. But when we do an exhibition, there's a learning there where we have to pay for the hire of the studio. We have to pay the resources and then, you know, the profits get sort of split back into the studio as well as back to the artist. But Katie's learning that she can become an independent artist now and we can learn to go and buy our own resources so that one day when perhaps I'm not around, they have those skills to keep going.
And to teach other people to do that as well, because yes. it's you know, all of this, what you're doing at Arts for All has a massive ripple effect and we probably only know the very beginning of that as well, because it's yeah. kind of, it's the way that you're passing down not just knowledge, but like encouragement and love to these artists and the families and everyone who's seeing the art. I mean, last year I went to the exhibition that was at Margate School.
Thank you.
And my partner and I were really excited about it. And it was such a joy to yes. be in, because again, like everything on the walls was just filled with so much curiosity and love. And my partner, who is also called Alex and is very silly, saw one of Alex's paintings and was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. So they bought that and we have it up in our living room now. And it makes me so happy when I see it, because
yeah,
it's just, I think we're often really obsessed as a kind of society with finding things that are normal and wanting yeah. to fit in.
Yes.
And that can be really boring and really constrictive. And I loved walking into that space and just seeing perspectives that I had not seen before. It felt really exciting.
I absolutely love being in the space and in an exhibition where people come in and they talk about the artwork. And then they go, oh, have you read this? Oh, have you read that? And there's texts all around about each individual artist. And they get that element of surprise that young person has communication and learning and is hearing impaired and uses BSL and to communicate. And then so it adds to the artwork, I feel, and to the show, that element of surprise. Because when you first walk in, you think it's a lovely, beautiful, bright, eclectic, colourful show, but it's informative as well. And it reflects what goes on in the studio. And I believe always that if that 2 hours where that young person is with me in the studio space goes away feeling less anxious and has enjoyed the time with me, that's the most important thing. If we get that little bit right there, everything else that comes out of the studio will work and is honest and again, informative and colourful and bright. But people that know me know I'm really passionate about what I do. I say yes to lots of things. I'm hoping I can get new opportunities for us as a studio. And to get to work with other community projects, which we, you know, I give the young people as many opportunities to get their creative artwork out into the local community as well as nationally. Last year, we currently have three paintings in the Turner Centre. We had a painting in the RA summer show last year. We were awarded quite a lot of certificates for the children, young children that come. And like I said before, the adult sales are doing incredibly well. We're not online yet. I think that's the next bit that we hope to do within Art for All, is to get an online shop and a website and everything up and running this year. I think that will be the next step. But perhaps also, I think a book would be great. I think a book that tells the story of this journey of where Art for All is. I mean, it is called Sandra Art for All, and the only reason it's called that is because when I started Facebook, there was an Art for All group, so it had to have something else on there. So I put my name on there. So we're looking at hopefully maybe coming up with, we're more established as a studio now, so I think I'm looking at Studio Art for All or Art for All Studio. So we're probably going to change our name soon. So things like that.
That's so lovely, though, to be thinking about what you've clearly done is established a really tight community there. And I think that stuff has to come first before you start branching out and looking at what else you want to do and how you want to spread this further. And obviously that's kind of the heart of everything that you do.
Yeah.
So
I didn't feel that it was going to be like that in the beginning. I thought there'd be a high turnover and you're always going to have to get new artists back in. But no, they can't. The majority of the young people are actually ex-pupils of mine from the college. So I did know some of them well. And I actually did seek out Alex Mortimer, tried to find his mum for about 6 months and finally found Alex, because I remember Alex very well at the college. So to have Alex at the studio, he lives with a young man called Gareth, and so the care home said, was there any chance we could try Gareth? And I said, yeah, come along. Within 5 minutes, I know straight away if I feel I can help that young person or not. And so Gareth is here now, and they've all been coming for nearly 6 years. They check the diary that they're coming, or if I'm on holiday, they check the next month just to make sure they're coming back. And all the time I ask them, do you want your name? Do you want to book in or not? Do you want, you know, as much as I can, I want them to have ownership of what they can do. But it is with support. You know, it is guided. I do guide them with their art practice to be as independent as possible. In a safe way. So, like I said, I have one young man who doesn't really want to be a part of the exhibitions, and I hope one day he will. Hope one day. But if he doesn't, it's okay, as long as I keep trying.
Yeah.
But without trying to push them to feel uncomfortable, because, again, I guess I understand what it's like to be pushed to feel uncomfortable in certain situations. It's a reflection, I guess, of who I am and understanding their needs.
I think there's something super important there about giving someone enough encouragement so that they can figure out their own boundaries.
Yes.
Because the work that I've done with kind of disabilities and additional needs has been through sexual health. So okay. I used to be part of the Sexual Health and Disability Alliance, and a lot of that I've gone into schools and taught like relationship and sex ed. Which is...
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And it's some of the funniest and some of the most challenging lessons I've ever done when I was teaching. But there's so much stuff in there. And I think, again, there's a real crossover with art and sexual health and sex education of, like, these are spaces where there can be such a lack of nurture and a lot of fear of, oh, God, but if I give someone art materials, then what are they going to do? And how is that going to fit to my standard of what art is and what good art looks like? If I educate someone so that they have the capacity to navigate consent.
Yes.
Is that going to make me feel like, will that make me feel uncomfortable because I have a certain image of like what a young person with a like learning disability has and what they should and shouldn't be doing? It's a really rich conversation and so important. And I really like hearing it from other people's perspectives in like different topics, different worlds.
You want them to feel safe in where they are right now. I feel that when you get a relationship and they trust you, you can then push them outside of their comfort zone very safely, perhaps holding onto your arm and off you go, it's okay, we're going to do this. Yeah, that is really important to me, that they feel safe in the studio. So that when we go out into the community, they feel safe because Sandra's there as well. And we're now in this public space where lots of people are around that do unpredictable things, and I don't know how I'm going to react to that.
But you're there, like, steering
aware,
the ship.
Yeah, very aware of that.
That's so nice.
Of what makes them feel comfortable. So, you know, we've had COVID in the last couple of years, so I would normally have the young people with me working at the exhibitions, maybe even creating at the exhibitions, but we haven't been able to do that. That's something we definitely want to look at this year, finding spaces where we can hold an exhibition and an open studio. I'd really love to bring the studio into the community.
Oh, that sounds great.
So that people can meet the guys, because they are awesome. They're just incredible. They're just interesting, and they are who they are. And that's what I love about it. There's not a lot of conversation that happens in the studio when you've got someone who's deaf and autistic with severe learning disabilities, but the communication comes through the observation of what they create. And that is fascinating. And I think as calling myself an artist now and thinking about myself as an artist, I think that's where once when I did a solo painting show on my own, I was just I was just lost in all this paint thrown on all over these canvases. Now I'm much more aware of what it is that I am as an artist. And I think my creativity is knowing what's best for that young person. Mm-hmm. That is completely different to the next session that I have.
Yeah.
And how, even if it's a medium that's not enjoyable to me, if it's enjoyable to that young person, then I get enjoyment out of doing something I don't normally like doing or I enjoy creating with.
And then we're all like learning from each other.
Yeah, definitely.
That's so special. Oh, Sandra, thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be talking to you and to hear about this. It's such a joy. And thank you for sharing about Arts for All.
Thank you.
I've loved since the summer when I came to your exhibition, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you.
And to end, we kind of started at the beginning and we've meandered our way through your life and Arts for All. And I kind of want to end with thinking about how you'd like to be remembered, your legacy, and how, in an Arts for All context, but broader than that as well. Who do you want to be in your life? I'm ending on a really simple question.
That's like the most difficult question to ask somebody, I think.
Well, don't think about it too much.
Yeah, I think just to give those that perhaps don't have a voice through creativity. If I could just finish off, I often imagine what it would be like if primary and secondary schools all taught BSL, not because there's a hearing impaired child in the school, but just because we had it across the country. We have a second language in this country, which is British Sign Language. And if we had it in schools where they did it through music and drama and performances and art, it's such a beautiful language to learn. And if anybody wants to learn BSL, I recommend it. It's a wonderful creative language that if we did have it in our secondary and primary schools and our nurseries, I think it would give a lot more confidence to children that, like me, was afraid to put their hand up. They might find a skill that they're really good at. And I think it would look rather good if a hearing impaired child went into a school and everybody was already learning BSL. Be a nice way.
That's shaped me up a little bit. We're so often, when people, in terms of access needs, it's like a rushed afterthought of like, oh no, okay, quick, BSL, let's do that. And actually, if that was just
embedded.
With all of this stuff, it's embedding it into the ways that we learn and we communicate.
And I understand there's funding issues and all of that that comes to it, but in my world, to see some of the children I work with walk into a main street school and everybody's welcoming them and saying, hello, this is my name, and this is my classroom, and they can do that all in BSL, or what colour do you want? Oh, yeah, I'll get the red for you. I'll show you where the paints are. How simple is that?
Yeah.
It's beautiful as well. It is a beautiful language, so I thoroughly recommend anybody that wants to learn BSL to go out there and learn it. It's beautiful.
You've inspired me to look into that more now. Now maybe one day I'll be able to do a sex education lesson in BSL. That would be fun.
That would be interesting.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Sandra. I've really loved chatting about your life and your passions, and I can't wait to see what you do next and just creating this like glorious community of artists. Really special thing. So thank you for everything that you do.
Well, we really appreciate the fact that you're allowing us on your platform to share with you what we do.
It's not allowing, it is welcoming with open arms. We are so happy to have you here. Thank you to Olbies for having us, and to Arts Council Recovery Fund for making this possible. Thanks to Darren on tech and Lisa, who's doing the BSL for this and all of the other podcasts. And we look forward to seeing Leading Ladies grow each year as a platform for us to celebrate the incredible women of Thanet. For more information on POW, the festival and the charity, check out powthanet.com and powthanet on socials. Thanks very much. Podcast.